Well, you know, I never like to root against the home team, but tonight I was because it was the bottom of the ninth. And, guys, I'm sorry. If you needed one more person cheering for you, it wasn't me tonight. I didn't want to see a rally. I didn't want to see extra innings. I didn't want to see us miss a show on this very important Tuesday. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with Kyle.
Yes, I'm here. I'm Kyle.
You know, for 3 weeks in a row now, we've been affected by sports here at Stony Brook. And every week, it's been a different game. First week, it was lacrosse. Second week, it was basketball. This week, it's baseball. We give you variety. When we, you know, preempt programs, we do it for all kinds of different reasons. And this time, it was the front part of the program that got delayed instead of shortened at the end. But we're here now, and we're not going to be focusing on this the entire show, just a little bit. Exciting game, though. We drove by it. We drove by it and saw it going on our way over here.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually right next to one of the entrances we use frequently. Well, so we were able to see the game in progress.
Skype is asking Matt to rate the quality of the call that we just had for the game. What do you think? I'll give it 4 stars. How about that?
It was pretty good. There were a couple of garbled moments when they were adding color to the game.
3 stars?
Yeah, I would go 3. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Can you do a half? If I hold the option key, what happens? No. Okay, so let's do 3, and I hit send. Okay. Oh, and they want to know about audio issues. I heard noise in the call, volume. You know what? I'm not doing this now. We're doing radio. For God's Skype, leave us alone. Go away.
You changed the subject.
Well, it popped up on the screen. I'm sorry. Where's the show? Hold on. The show's on the other side of the room.
What are you doing?
Get the show. It's all the way over here.
Oh, yeah. So as E has indicated, we basically stormed in, sent the sports people marching, and are in a bit of disarray. Didn't get to do our normal handoff and so on and so forth.
Well,
we're flexible. We're versatile a lot.
We have a 35-minute intro, so you know usually we play the whole thing before we start talking anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But there is much to discuss and talk about. I'm getting feedback.
I am, too. Where is that coming from?
Is there another mic up of some sort or headphones that aren't
sealing? No, I don't see one.
Okay. Well, maybe someone poured mercury into the board.
There might be another headphone plugged in somewhere that's emitting sound.
Dump half a liter of mercury.
Yeah, that sounds a little tinny. I'm not pleased with it.
Yeah, tin or mercury. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, so we're...
Whoa! Well, that's unacceptable.
Is the computer up in some way because of phone calls?
Everything's down.
Are your headphones
down.
Super loud?
Actually, this thing is up, but that wasn't
turn
on.
That
it's
down.
It's not that. It's something's up. I don't know what it is.
Is the phone off the hook? Well, this is Off the Wall, and we're coming at you... in an interesting time, basically, the focus this week is on the election, because we're not impeaching, and...
What election?
2020.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay. Yeah, that's
right. This
is
a political show, right?
Well, it can be, but 2020, yeah.
We don't have to talk about that.
Why is it? No, just tell me, why is it that... Trudeau can have a scandal, a mini scandal, and they're talking about him losing all his power within weeks. Why does it happen that way? You know, other countries, there's you don't pay a parking ticket. Sorry, Matt. All of a sudden you're out of you're out of power. You're kicked out because of that, the little tiny thing. Whereas here we've got all kinds of cheating and lying. And high crimes and high misdemeanors and high felonies and everything, and you know, it's impossible to get rid of them. You know, you can't impeach, you can't indict, you can't convict, you can't lock up. You just gotta wait till 2020. I'm tired of waiting. Want it to be over.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Truly, no. I'm just vent. You know, this is part of community radio, and we're here. We're here for you. Occasionally you write us. We might get to some letters a little later. And we also let people call in. Yeah, that's right. We discuss directly with our listeners, which is unusual. You don't find that on a lot of radio shows. And as I said or alluded to before, we do occasionally talk politics, but that is not a foregone conclusion. We do not always do that. If you've been following things in the UK, they had yet another Brexit vote today. I say Brexit with a G, or two Gs, like eggs, as in Eggs Benedict, Brexit.
Yes, another vote, another pivotal Brexit vote. May I ask a question, Kyle? May I just ask a simple question?
I can't tell you. I can't guarantee I have the answer, but go ahead. Yeah,
from
please,
a simpleton,
please.
I just want to ask a simple question. All right, so basically, this was another vote on Theresa May's Brexit deal.
It's bringing her deal, yes, back to the table, as it were. And I don't know if it was been adjusted or anything. I know she's been adjusted. She has no voice.
She has no voice. That's true. But basically, this is the same deal. There's not much of a difference. People are on both sides are saying there hasn't really been much of a change. And, of course, it lost again by a huge margin. But here's my question. Why is it that it's okay for Theresa May to re-vote on an issue that has already been voted upon? And it's unheard of, unthinkable to ask the people a second time, do you want this? Knowing all that you know now, here, we're asking you again. That you can't do, but Theresa May can keep going over and over again, asking the same question until somebody caves. It just seems very hypocritical.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and she's clearly just an operative for her party at this point, because I don't know that she wants to go through with it. But Brexit means Brexit.
I don't even think her party is where... I heard somebody... we were watching coverage today, and I heard a conservative MP say that he favors a second vote. A second vote with the people. I mean, what is wrong with that? A lot of people did not know what they were voting for the first time. There's a lot of people that have since registered to vote since that happened. If people vote a second time for Brexit, okay, that's a mandate. Then you pretty much have to go with it. But if the mood has changed... isn't it worth hearing that? Does it not count at all that people don't want this after having gone through this traumatic experience? It's something I really think they ought to look at and soon. And you know what? If there's some kind of reason why you can't ask the same question twice, okay, then I have a way out for you. Just ask the question, should we have another vote? It's a ridiculous question to ask. But waste a lot of time and money. But if that's the way in, ask that question. It's not a second referendum. Then it's a different question. Should we have another vote on what we just went through? And if they say no, all right. So we continue. We continue on. If they say yes, then you have the will of the people and you have to listen to it.
Yep. Yeah. And I think since looking at it and the complexities of it, the sentiment and mood around that is less towards accepting it, and a lot of these catchphrases, backstop and no backstop and all these things, no deal, all that. It's complicated, and it is worthy of taking another look at. Another kind of way of thinking about it that I caught today in just some of the wrap-ups is that this is 40 years. 40 years it took to build this alliance, that experiment being the European Union, and they're trying to disengage from it in about less than two, around that, for all the reasons that have been discussed here and in other shows. Of course, they have a couple more weeks till the end of the month, and they've even been talking about extending that further or having, I don't know if they were entertaining having a vote, I couldn't quite get the gist of it, but the idea of extending the exit. And I don't know the EU is too keen on that either. They're more annoyed because really they're just being dragged through this, entangled in domestic issues because a lot of this stuff has to be cleared and okayed. Thus, Theresa May's back and forth with Jean-Paul Juncker.
Think about how much time the EU has spent on this.
Yeah.
It wasn't their idea, and they've spent so much time.
Yep.
So obviously they want some kind of resolution one way or another.
Yeah, incredible diversion and really greedy of Britain, I think. They're just really, really greedy because they want all of the benefits. They want... they don't want they are not interested in consequences. They do not want to face any kind of consequence, and they want to spend all this time mitigating every single possibility and controlling every bit of this conversation.
Yeah, I think it's nasty to call them greedy. I think that's rather mean. I'd call them infantile, you know.
Yeah, it's more apt.
Like being a big baby, that's what I call them. You know, like you're 1 year old and you just want your way or no way. You're
right.
Throwing a big tantrum. I think that's more fair.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're in a group, you don't get what you want all the time. We started 15 minutes late today because we're in a group called WUSB, and you know we're talking about it, we're not complaining about it. You know,
you know what
we don't
I
want to divest. We don't want to. We don't want a Brusby or whatever. You call
I did
that.
Stuff. I was Wegzit.
You were cleaning. You were cleaning the station.
You know why? Because it says clean the station on the information board we have at the front entrance.
And maybe if more shows were delayed by 15 minutes, the station would be cleaner.
That's right.
All
I
right.
threw out old magazines from 2015 because come on. Really, this place doesn't need that. We need new information, fresh information. So anyway, moving along, that's just one of many issues. You've got airplanes and commercial manufacturers of such vehicles in trouble. You've got the scandal in Canada, as you mentioned.
It's not a scandal.
Venezuela has no light.
It's a bit of a scandal, but it's not a scandal anything compared to the things that are going on in this country.
No. SNC-Lavalin is what we're referring to. There's also what I mentioned just a second ago is the power outages in Venezuela. Really interesting. I was meaning to spend some time trying to get some concrete reasons as to why they don't have power, what exactly is causing the blackout. Are there armed men who've taken over the power stations?
Okay, we don't really know anything about this, but what's your theory? Why do you think the power is out in Venezuela? I mean, they have so much oil, so much, you know, of a means of producing power. But why do you think they've is it just incompetence? Is it some kind of sabotage? What do you think?
I think it could be a combination of that, but it could also be you know, corporate interests domestically, maybe trying to make a statement, cutting off the supply locally because of increasing tensions and dissatisfaction there. It could be Maduro's control. Maybe he has military entities controlling the power plant. Maybe it's American operatives and mercenaries. Who knows? I don't know. I wanted to get stories and perspective on exactly the company. Because I was hearing some rumors that kind of, along the vein of your question, mm-hmm. There was rumors of incompetence or maintenance issues, et cetera, kind of along the lines of what we were hearing in Puerto Rico after that terrible disaster.
And where did that come from? Where did those allegations come from of incompetence?
Exactly.
And, yeah. It's insane.
Specious claims from suspect and guilty parties a la our government in maintaining that territory. But this is different. This is a sovereign state. As you said, they have tremendous resources, and Maduro assumes control and seems to have allegiance with the army, and you'd think they'd be able to protect those kinds of important infrastructure items power.
The thing I'm hearing in the mass media, whenever they mention the possibility that the power grid is under control of the Americans have hacked into the power grid, it's usually, you know, scoffed at, dismissed out of hand, and we're kind of doing the same thing, saying, yeah, that's kind of ridiculous. But those same mass media outlets don't blink an eye when they say that Russians or Chinese have hacked into our power grid. You know, we're expected to believe that, but not expected to believe that our country has done the same thing to a far less powerful country. So think about that. No matter what you believe has happened in this particular case, look at how one story is presented, how a different story is presented, and try to balance the two.
Yeah, absolutely. Framing is important. I did find stories that people, 6 out of 10 garbage bags have been rifled through because people are eating garbage. They're also killing flamingos, I think, for food, and giant anteaters, which I think is interesting. Dogs, cats, everything else, horses as well.
Wow.
They're all being killed for food.
Well, flamingos and anteaters, that's not options we have here. So
no.
I'd love to know how that goes. That's, whoa.
Yeah. So that's the kind of reporting we're getting out of there. Is it true? Is it propaganda? Is it both? I don't know, but love to know. Seems like, we're just getting a lot of pictures of candle light. But what is disturbing, and another part of that story that I did read was or that we caught, I think, in some of the reporting is the hospitals are usually protected, but they're protected to keep journalists out because they don't want any of the crimes and victims to or lack of supplies, et cetera, and now in this case power, which is really tough for a hospital to keep things going with just generators if they even have them. So that was another alleged thing, is that the hospitals are at risk of being overrun and looted, or you know, they're just not safe. But the guards are only there to keep reporting of what's going on a humanitarian level from getting out to the rest of the media. So again, it seems kind of incomplete and serves the interests of like Juan Guaido, of a regime change. You know, okay, this is evidence. Maduro's got to go. But do we know? Do we know what's going on? What are the people saying? What do the people want? I know they're suffering, and I see a lot of pictures of people in candlelight, and maybe a couple reports. I think Vice had some reporters in hospitals there, but it is increasingly a crisis.
Well, I'll tell you this. When you stop feeding the military, that's when things will start to change. When they start feeling the pain and they decide, well, we're not going to support this regime anymore, that's when you actually see a difference. But here's what I don't want to see. I don't want to see American might flexing its muscles and deciding what happens down there. It's got to be the people. They have to decide. And I don't even think the neighboring countries should be the ones moving in and deciding who gets to take over or how this is going to play out. It's understandably you view that with suspicion and you push back when that kind of a thing happens. So if we really care that much, I mean you know, as individuals, as people, if we really care about the people, how about this? How about we say, hey, China, why don't you come in and help these people out, and we'll back off. You know, you certainly have the means to do this. Maduro will probably trust you because you're our adversary. And since we don't have any ulterior motives, that's not going to bother us. And it'll be good to see the people fed again. And maybe you can convince Maduro to, like, you know, take a vacation somewhere and not come back and put somebody else in power. And we'll all live happily ever after. Is that naive?
It's a possibility. It may be maybe just the solution that's needed in this scenario. And maybe China's not the country. Maybe there's other countries.
They've got all the money.
Okay,
they
sure.
Do.
Yeah, you know, then if that's it, then fine. Yeah. But suffice to say, I think, you know, there would be a blackout anyway. Would change come or not?
Uh-huh.
It's just about who has control of the switch, and is that the military? Is it us?
It can't be us, and that is one thing that I will adamantly say over and over again. I think I might be saying it a bit louder in months ahead, but
yeah.
No, the United States should not be involved in Venezuela.
Well, you know, things are kind of wrapping up in Syria, and, you know, Afghanistan's looking a little boring these days.
Yeah, our mercenaries have to have work. They got to go somewhere, right?
It's about jobs. This is about jobs. I got a job for you.
How about you fix the damn potholes outside? How about that? How about you build a train that goes faster than 30 miles an hour? Huh? How about you have more than one track out here to Port Jefferson? That'd be nice.
You want to talk about trains?
That's just within 10 miles.
Okay. All right. You want to talk about trains? All right. So
I don't want to talk about trains.
Go ahead. Report about Amtrak this weekend on our favorite CBS news magazine.
What'd they do now?
Apparently, they're not safe.
But we all knew that. It's American trains. American trains aren't safe. We know that.
Apparently. Yeah, they're not. We sit here and we go on and on, waxing poetic about how great the trains are, and they're death traps.
No,
they're
trains.
Death traps on wheels.
The concept of trains is great, but we have a feature called negative track control.
Positive. Well,
no, we have a feature called negative track control. It's the opposite of positive track control. It basically ensures crashes.
I caught that, yeah. No, actually, I think you're right. It is negative train control.
And that I did there, yes.
We don't control them. They go whatever way they're going to go. And, if you're going to smack into a freight train at 60 miles an hour and break all your legs, that's America. That's us being great. And a lot of American trains are unsafe. And, in fact, positive train control, which I'm I'm betting LIRR, the Long Island Railroad, is going to have before Amtrak has it. I'd like to see bets, wagers on that. Who gets it first? But without beating up on either, it's been mandated by law federally since 2012. And the story this weekend was talking about the Federal Rail Administration, how that is preventing the implementation, how millions of dollars have been spent and squandered, and yet people still are depending on these rail lines. We're not improving them. We're not laying much more track on average and across the country. There is substantial need, and that's for the existing stuff. That's not even talking about our aspirations, because we really get aspirational here. I'm talking just about what exists, and it's in a bad, bad state. And I thought that was really, really interesting, because that affects all people. Not everybody drives, you know. And this is the kind of improvements, the kind of things that make societies able to do greater things. So, yeah, I'd like to see that sped up. It seems like when something was mandated, you know, it should have been gotten to by now.
Okay, but here's the thing. You can mandate all you want, but when you cut the funding that makes it possible, how are they supposed to implement it? And that's what's been happening. You know, they say, yeah, Amtrak, you got to get your act together. You got to do all this. And by the way, we're cutting your budget by 40%. That makes it a lot more difficult. Now, fortunately, Congress has been a bit more generous to rail than Trump has wanted to be. And with things like the Green New Deal being talked about, at least, if not being seriously considered, we might be sort of changing direction a little bit in how we think about these things. And by the way, about the Green New Deal, I am sick of hearing people slam that. I am sick of hearing ignorant politicians say this is a pipe dream, it's never going to happen. It's not legislation. It's not something that has specific rules. It's basically guidelines to aspire to. And why would you not want to aspire to something that uses less polluting fuel and makes things more efficient, faster, cleaner? That is what we should all be aspiring to. So I don't know why everybody doesn't embrace this. Of course, the people who make profits from coal and things like that, I can see why they might not want to. But once we realize that that's kind of a bad thing for all of us, then I think we can actually move ahead in a positive way.
I think the antidote is for people to realize it's for everyone. And that's a little bit like what I was getting at with rail transport in general and it being safe as well, because it should go hand in hand with the idea of that system flourishing. But it's true. Like, you know, it's aspirational type thing. So, of course, we're talking about it. But the Green New Deal itself is simply guidelines. It's a map. It's an outline for what's possible or the direction we should go in light of what we know scientifically about the climate and the perils we're probably going to face as we descend from peak oil and so on and so forth. And those answers are out there. The innovation is out there. Those are all areas where people can study and can be employed and can we can advance as a society in general. So it should not be a scary thing. It should not be an exclusive thing. I think that's what fossil fuels have been in a business sense, have been a very exclusive thing, and the means of production and so on have been tightly held in that way. That the entry as a competitor just does not seem as attainable. But there's new new technologies, and it's stuff that they don't necessarily have. They don't maintain ownership of the ideas or the technologies involved. And I think that's good. That should be a part of our cadre of solutions. We really are good at doing a lot of different things and having a diverse industry or diverse energy sources. That stuff's healthy. That diversity is a parallel to so many of the ethos that this country's built on, and we should be excited about it. And it shouldn't just be a branding for Democrats. It's sad that I think, sad in some ways that some Democrats are distancing themselves, especially leadership, Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nancy Pelosi's visited some refineries and renewable energy projects. I know the Obama administration was very supportive of those kinds of things. She's no stranger to that. Neither is Obama. Neither is a lot of the Democratic Party. I know a lot of them have interests with traditional companies, but it's about the diversity in general. And I think that they should come around and I don't think we should just force it necessarily as just an exclusive issue for Democrats. It's really for all Americans and could be a really good guideline for how we that instructs all of our policies across the board and across party lines.
Well, you know, at our best when we're aspiring to something new, something different, when we're saying, let's go to the moon, let's go to Mars, let's invest in this and try something different. I don't get people who say, let's bring it back to the way it was. Because the way it was never great. You know, you can tell yourself that we were once great, but really, there, you know, point to a period in history, and I can tell you all kinds of things that we were not doing well in that we can do better in now. Yes, we can be great. We can do great things, but only if we aspire, not if we regress backwards. So when you see something like a Green New Deal, which is talking about all kinds of ways that we can improve our infrastructure and not rely on certain things so much because we're doing something else instead, how is that a bad thing? Yeah, the same old people might not be making a profit doing the same old thing, but new people will be making profits doing different things. And, you know, we try things. Sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't. We learn. We get better. And that is how – look at what we're doing in space now. We get better every single time. Just looking at SpaceX alone, seeing how they have improved over the last few years, that's one company. This is how we grow. We don't grow by going backwards, by looking into the past. So, you know, the Green New Deal is something that I think really should be studied by everybody, talked about. And we are at our best when we are talking about all these things. Now, I want to bring it back to something we were talking about last week, and that was the Ilhan Omar controversy. We were talking about that quite a bit last week and how she was being unfairly targeted by people accusing her of anti-Semitism simply for saying that people
should be controlled by a foreign entity.
Basically, Israel's a foreign country, which, you know, apparently this is what it goes back to. It goes back to pre-World War II anti-Semitic tropes, where basically the Jewish people are seen as part of an international conspiracy that control all the banks and things like that. Now, keep in mind, that's different. That's different than pointing to a country which was not in existence before then. And when you're pointing in that specific country and saying, yeah, you know, if you're lobbying for Israel in the United States, and that is what you are doing, you're lobbying for a foreign country because it's a fact. It is a foreign country. And, yeah, it might make some people think of, wow, look, back in the day when Jews were considered part of an international conspiracy that controlled all the money, yeah, I could see how that might be seen as anti-Semitic. I do not think that's what she meant at all. I think she's basically criticizing people who basically say Israel above all else and the United States second. That is what the Israeli, that's what any lobby really does. They focus on their particular point of interest, and everything else comes second. And we do that a lot in this country. There is a lot of closed eyes towards things that happen over there that shouldn't happen over there. A lot of free passes being given out. It's not really right. Anyway, what we were talking about was also talked about in Congress, and it turns out the Democrats actually did something which I think is good. They did not target Omar directly. Instead, they encompassed their statement to include Islamophobia, racism of all sorts, because it's not just one target. There is a lot of anti-Semitism. We're seeing that every single day, no question there. But we're also seeing Islamophobia. We're seeing anti-black racism. We're seeing all kinds of ugly things. And it all needs to be condemned. And you can't cherry pick. You can't say, yeah, this can be condemned, but we're going to turn a blind eye towards this. No, that's not how it should work. The way it was presented in the media, the way the right wing is presenting it, somehow the Democrats failed by doing this? They failed to address the issue? No, they did address the issue. They addressed the whole issue, not just a tiny part of it. Now, I want to address an issue here just by doing a little bit of research on online. We all talk about how Trump is actually anti-Semitic, and we all recall what he said after Charlottesville, how there's fine people on both sides, neo-Nazis, etc. There is Holocaust remembrance where he doesn't even mention Jews, things like that, just horrible things. But I want to draw attention to a political ad that came out in 2016. This was while he was running for president. Now, basically, we can't play the video. We can't show you the video, that is. But you can find the video if you just basically search for anti-Semitic closing ad. I think you'll find it on YouTube pretty easily. But basically, there is this two-minute piece. We're just going to play a few seconds of it, where Trump is speaking throughout. And while he's speaking, they're showing imagery on screen. And it kind of reminds me of some of the Soviet propaganda, where they show faces of various heroes and villains and things like that as they're speaking. And the timing of what he says and what is shown on the screen is simply unbelievable. And I'm going to play an excerpt here, and then I'll tell you what was on the screen while particular words were being said. Have a listen.
Our movement is about replacing a failed and corrupt political establishment with a new government controlled by you, the American people. The establishment has trillions of dollars at stake in this election. For those who control the levers of power in Washington and for the global special interest, they partner with these people that don't have your good in mind. The political establishment that is trying to stop us is the same group responsible.
Okay. Well, now that's interesting because when he was saying for those who control the levers of power in Washington, that is when a picture of George Soros shows up on screen, Jewish financier. And then for the global special interests, that's when a picture of Janet Yellen, the Jewish Fed chair, shows up. And then they partner with these people who don't have your good in mind. Okay, never mind the bad grammar there. Partnering with who else? Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is partnering with these people. I mean, you're showing individual people here. Is it a coincidence they just happen to be Jewish when you're showing this particular description of somebody who controls the power, the global special interest? How is that not exactly what Omar was being accused of last week?
It's worse because of specific people. It's not saying a foreign state, mm-hmm, or another sovereign state, as was the distinction.
Exactly, yes. It's you have the video there. It really underlines the point. You could be showing all kinds of powerful people, but You pick those specifics, and
you could have shown a billowing flag. Without any people, right? But the edits were chosen like that, and mm-hmm, it's very, very clear the associations that the ad wants you to make.
There's a second excerpt here I'm going to play as well.
It's a global power structure that is responsible for the economic decisions that have robbed our working class, stripped our country of its wealth, and put that money into the pockets of a handful of large corporations and political entities.
Okay. So, in that particular excerpt there, stripped our country of its wealth and put that money into the pockets of, at that very moment, you don't see a corporate logo, you don't see large buildings or Wall Street or anything like that. No, you see Lloyd Blankfein, Jewish Goldman Sachs CEO. The only villains, apart from the politicians who are dealing with these villains, the only villains are Jews. All right, so before we start attacking someone like Ilhan Omar, who is basically new to Congress, speaking what she believes to be the truth, learning as she goes along, and I think being incredibly honest with expressing herself, let's look at you know, the real villains here, the people who are spreading hatred, the people who have a record of spreading hatred and not condemning racism, not condemning hatred when they see it, and they see it a lot. And that is something that I wish the mass media would focus on more, but they're not.
Yeah, it's false, you know, comparisons again that are misleading. And think of the salience, the like sort of, or the undertone and what that ad did during that really heated political moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the sentiment that it was conveying in a really subtle, well, not subtle, not
yeah,
so
it was
subtle.
So unsubtle.
Really
was,
obvious.
I was kind of surprised by how unsubtle it was.
But people don't even think when they're watching that. They're just looking at it thinking this is right, and it's got this stirring piano music and all of that. It's not meant to make you think. You're just supposed to agree. And they're not, I don't think, looking at it in such a critical way. But when it's taken back and split up, you really look at each of those frames, it's pretty obvious and wrong. I mean, that's the kind of propaganda that's been spewed. And but here we are deconstructing every word from the Democrats, this new class in the House. It's pretty ridiculous, but
yeah.
A sign of the times, as per usual.
This was a good thing that they did, having the dialogue and encompassing hatred from all different places, all different sources. It was important. It was a triumph, I think, and it should be recognized as such. And Democrats moving forward, hopefully, will do more of this. We'll engage in purity tests and condemnation of themselves, but instead of conversation, debates, all sorts of things like that, where these conversations are had. They're very important. They're urgently needed. Hey, I've got some positive news, and it comes from here at Stony Brook. Today, Tuesday, the LGBT Network and the Suffolk County Executive launched a major anti-bullying initiative at the network's largest annual conference, where more than 600 Long Island students gathered at the Charles B. Wang Center right here on the Stony Brook campus. Now,
that's a weird place.
That's a weird place?
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
How's it a weird place?
No, I don't know.
What are you just calling it a weird place?
It's a funny venue.
Well, it's an interesting building.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we have lots of interesting buildings here on campus. I can show you some. The LGBT Network, alarmed by a reported rise in hate crimes nationally, is strengthening its anti-bullying efforts and will offer after-school programs to support LGBT students in graduating high school and preparing for colleges. That's a weird way of phrasing. In graduating high school and preparing for college and careers, supporting them in those efforts. More than 600 students, as we mentioned, gathered for the one-day event here at Stony Brook, where the Pathways to Pride initiative was announced. The new program will provide tutoring, training in life skills, and handling financial matters, internships, summer jobs, assistance to high school students. It's being launched immediately. The network noted that an increase in bullying against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals has been documented by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is the Alabama-based organization that identifies hate groups and tracks bias crimes. It's to make sure that no matter what our students are facing in school, there's a pathway to pride, there's a pathway to the future, there's a pathway that you will be able to do whatever you want to do. And the program will be available to students in Nassau and Suffolk counties, either at the LGBT Network Centers or through the Gay Straight Alliance organizations that are at many schools. So it's great to see something like that being launched right here at Stony Brook.
Yeah. It's great to have resources for all kinds of students, and especially students that maybe don't get recognized, and you know, that have you know, interesting things that they're going through, and you know, that kind of outreach it's huge. It makes healthier humans in the greater society down the road, of course.
Well, I just wanted to end on a good note, and
that's good.
And we have done that. You can write to us, as some people do, but not nearly enough, because people don't write anymore. Our email address is otw@2600.com. We would love to hear from you. I'm told next week there is no sports.
No sports.
It's very unlikely anyway. We'll have a full hour next week. Maybe we'll take some phone calls. But in the meantime, write us a letter, otw@2600.com, and keep it tuned to WUSB. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
Hi, this is John Schofield, and you're listening to Radio Free Long Island, WUSB in Stony Brook.
Hi, this is Gary Carney, WUSB Stony Brook, FM 90.1.